This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Richard Spur.
Good morning. It is a fascinating subject, artificial intelligence, because I think none of us really knows quite how enormous it's going to be when it comes to the way that it could dominate our lives. Yes, take some of our jobs, but also help us in many ways. It's an unknown quantity, and I'm very much not an expert on it. Fevzi Turkalp, however, is, and you're about to hear from him in a couple of moments' time. This morning, he'll be taking your questions about artificial intelligence. The reason we're talking about it is because criminals are now using, and I suspect perhaps they've been doing it for some time, artificial intelligence to clone people's voices and then set up unauthorised direct debits over the phone. According to the National Trading Standards Association, they said that advanced voice cloning was part of an organised criminal operation that appeared to be targeting older people. Fraudsters began the process by asking victims to participate in so-called lifestyle surveys. So, you know, they got them talking on the phone so they could get a sample of their voice and get enough different aspects of it to create it themselves. And they also gathered things about their personal life, their health, their financial details, so that they could pass security when they called up whoever it was that they were trying to want them, the erroneous group that they were trying to make the direct debit to. And they cloned their voices. And then they could be used to set up payments with banks, all sorts of other things as well. And many of those victims didn't realise what was going on until, of course, it was too late. They're doing quite well, the NTS. I think they've blocked almost 21 million scam phone calls and shut down 2,000 numbers in a six-month period. But their head of scams said, "We are still seeing a deeply disturbing trend, people using these scams to clone people's voices and then rob them effectively." So that's awful, and I'm going to begin by asking Fevzi about that. First of all, Fevzi, it's really good of you to take the time. Good morning to you.
Morning.
This is hugely worrying, and you know, often we think perhaps of these scams as predating particularly on older people, but I mean, anyone can be taken in because some of them are so accurate, aren't they?
Yeah, and increasingly so. Voice cloning, even video cloning of individuals, you know, the ability to create an avatar, even just from a still photograph, sometimes you can create a three-dimensional avatar, that's to say a video representation of an individual, and it looks and moves like them. We have watched videos on YouTube without realizing that the person presenting that video is actually not real. They may be, in fact, there are now YouTube channels where they actually make a feature of it and say, I'm the AI clone of such and such. Whilst they're off making money, I'm going to talk to you about this. And the technology is ever more convincing and ever harder to spot. So we need to make a number of changes. I mean, the first thing I'd do is just remove any voice passwords that you've agreed with your bank or other institutions, because they're no longer secure,
yeah.
Either as a part of a authentication system or the whole thing.
I was made to do that, I think, some time ago. You had to say, "My voice is my password," I think. And you know, use that to identify. As you say, that's clearly very, very insecure now. They ought to get rid of that.
Yeah, no, I'm to be honest, I was never quite comfortable with that because I wasn't sure how well they would, you know, discern an impersonator from my own voice. There's enough variation in the human voice to make that quite tricky, to be fair.
Now, you know, clearly this is something that the NTS are on to, and hopefully they'll shut down many of these things. But it's rather like, the little boy with his finger in the dike, isn't it? You know, you plug one hole and another one opens, and AI, of course, is self-expanding because of the nature of it. Just talk a little bit about something which I hadn't heard of really until a couple of days ago, Devolo Magic 2. This is a Wi-Fi system, isn't it?
Yeah, so this is quite an amazing system. So you may be familiar with mesh Wi-Fi networks. So the idea is that in our homes, Wi-Fi often doesn't penetrate very well through walls, and the furthest reaches of our mansions don't always get a good internet signal. And it can also be in smaller homes where there's, in fact, flats are notorious for this, where there's a lot of Wi-Fi systems packed together, and your neighbor's Wi-Fi ends up interfering with your own, and you get poor internet even in a smaller home.
That's exactly my problem. I've got the exact problem. Thick stone walls and Wi-Fi do not go well together.
Yeah, so this setup, so Develo is D-E-V-O-L-O, it's a German company, and they make these hybrid systems. So it does create a mesh Wi-Fi network, and what a mesh network is you have two or more Wi-Fi plumes that mesh together. So even as you walk around, you get a continuous coverage. You don't have to drop your call or whatever it is you're doing. But the problem with that is it still relies solely on Wi-Fi to penetrate, and it might get through a wall, but it'll end up being slower. Or it might not reach at all. So what this does is it's hybrid. It uses Wi-Fi, but it also uses a technology called Powerline. Powerline squirts the internet through your mains wiring. So you have one plug that plugs into the wall socket near your router, where the internet comes into your home. It then squirts the internet signal in two ways through the mains wiring, and it pops up on another one of these adapters plugged in, let's say in your most remote room. It creates a Wi-Fi plume there. So first of all, that Wi-Fi signal hasn't had to be repeated or penetrate through the walls or contend with interference on the way. But at the same time, it provides two very fast Ethernet connector. So it not only is spreading a wireless signal, it's spreading a wired signal. And for some things like gaming and 4K video, you know, watching TV shows in 4K and films, that's the ideal thing, because effectively what you've then got is a wired connection all the way from the router where the internet comes into your home through the mains wiring and then out through a wire into your games console or your TV set, and that means that you don't have to spend several hundred pounds per room on having an Ethernet cable installed. You know, most of our homes don't have that. Most of us, you know, wish we did. So this thing, it costs just under £200 for two nodes and about £300 for three. But in fact, most homes can do quite well with two. And if you have a problem, you can always add one later.
I'm tempted to go out and get one tomorrow. It's such a problem. It really is.
And I should say there's two versions of this. So this is the one that's got this. So the two versions only differ in how fast the Wi-Fi is. One is Wi-Fi 6 and the other one is an earlier version. But to be honest, even if you've got 1 gigabit Ethernet, you're unlikely to notice the difference. And this setup is about £100 cheaper. So if you go to Develo, devolo.co.uk, you can see the new versions are stamped new, and there's three versions of it. There's two adapters, three adapters, and an add-on adapter, so you can build it up in the way that you want. But it's really good. I would say buy it from somewhere with a really good returns policy, just in case you have any problems. So, you know, Amazon's the obvious one, but there are others as well that will just, you know, take it back, no questions asked. And that's the way I do it, just to make sure. But it's quite unique. It's very hard to find the hybrid products. Everyone's trying to get faster and faster Wi-Fi, and the faster the Wi-Fi is, the less it penetrates, right? So you've got that sort of trade-off. You can either have slower Wi-Fi that penetrates better, or faster Wi-Fi, but it doesn't have the same range.
So for example, let's say you've got, I don't know, a PlusNet router or a BT router. It will attach into that router and then propagate the signal around your house through the power lines.
Yeah, so you connect your... So the router is for those, you know, that aren't up on this, it's the box that looks a bit like a, you know, size of a paperback book or maybe a bit bigger. It's where the internet comes into the home, and then that router typically produces a Wi-Fi signal, which then gets spread around the house. And for some people, that's enough. But what you would do here is you would plug the first of the adapters into the main socket near the router and then connect the two using just an Ethernet cable, which actually comes with it. So you've got a wired connection from the router into the power grid that goes around your home.
Yeah.
So it's beautiful because it gives you a wired connection all the way through.
Yeah.
Plus the convenience of Wi-Fi at the remote end as well.
And it's as fast as an Ethernet connection, you reckon?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's as fast as
a hardwired connection.
Yeah. Yes. Well, you can have the hardwired connection because in the bottom of each adapter, at the far end, are two Ethernet sockets.
Great.
So you could plug two devices in that remote room.
Yeah.
As well as having the Wi-Fi as well. So you've got the best of both worlds.
I know what I'm going to be investigating this weekend, I'll tell you what, because it's been a nightmare trying to get... Because we've got the router upstairs, and the walls are so thick, the floors are so thick, it's very hard to get it through. This says, Richard, how do we know that it is you that is talking to us? You don't, I suppose, Dominic. Yeah, it could be... that would be a bit of a coup, wouldn't it, to get AI to replace you. I have to say, some of the work that I do in the voiceover world has been taken over by AI, but... how can I say, world's smallest violin. Fevzy, just a quick one before the break. This says, I currently use facial recognition to access my bank account apps on my phone, as I do. Is that still safe?
Yeah, because facial recognition on your phone is not you authenticating to a third party. It's you identifying yourself to your device and therefore accessing the other services. So it's quite safe. The only time I would worry about facial recognition or indeed fingerprint, for any sort of biometrics, is when you visit the United States. You know that they have this habit now of insisting that they look inside your phone. I was speaking to a lawyer about this the other day who'd actually gone through this process, and they said to turn off biometrics and facial recognition in particular before entering the United States, because whilst they can't force you to reveal your password, they can point your own phone at you.
I see.
So that's I guess that's the exception to that. But I think the best thing is what's called two-factor or multi-factor authentication. So when we're trying to identify ourselves, we should use more than one factor. So a password is something that you know. Biometrics like facial recognition or fingerprint is something that you are, but you can also have something that you own. So that could be your smartphone that where they send a message to your phone with a code, and then you enter that. A better one is a device called a YubiKey. That's YubiKey, all one word. I think it's a Scandinavian company. It looks like a USB thumb drive, and they can plug in via USB, although some of them work wirelessly as well. And what that is it's a physical key. So even if someone tricks you, we're talking about scams and so forth. If someone tricks you and socially engineers you out of your password, convinces you to part with your password, it's no good to them unless they've actually stolen the YubiKey off you as well.
Well, that sounds like a good idea and a sort of safety net. I'm constantly getting messages saying, oh, your password has been compromised, or your password is too simple. And sometimes it's just so much to remember, although, of course, your phone very often will remember it themselves. Let's go to Sean, who's in Kentish Town in North London. Morning, Sean.
Good evening, Richard. What a day.
Well, I know, yes.
What a day.
It has been quite a day.
Hasn't it just?
But let us focus on the future to an extent and AI and technology.
I did all my degrees in AI, eventually having a PhD in AI. And a couple of things always bothered me, and I've been in this industry very many years, going right back to the beginning when we had very basic devices and going right back there. But one of my bugbears is, as we develop AI, we never teach AI how to be human. In other words, when you look at the rules, AI will make decisions for us. Once we let AI have these decisions, what's stopping the AI deciding it doesn't want the human being when we've not taught it how to behave?
Well, I feel I'm going to duck down because I have these two towering experts, you with your PhD and Fevzy with all of his knowledge. So I'll let you talk directly to him. Fevzy, I know we've touched on this before. What's your answer to Sean? Have a chat with him.
So hi, Sean.
Hello.
Of course, this is the question of AI alignment. How do we create AI systems now whose future generations will keep us safe and won't harm
exactly.
us? And you know, unlike iRobot, you see it where you get, you know, the three laws, Isaac Asimov's laws. Those don't work because there's a team at MIT who've been working on this for decades. And so far, there's nothing that we can reliably impart to today's AIs that will keep us safe from future generations. And
so they can't be future-proofed?
Well, you know, not yet. I mean, it is tricky. I mean, it's really a question of free will, isn't it? It's a bit like saying, what could I tell my child today so that their grandchildren won't try and come back and kill me?
When I did my master's, I used the film, you know, the T2 film, as my my basis for my thesis, and it proved itself quite straight away, basically, because there's no laws in place, there's no limitations, and it worries me. Besides, I don't do much of it now because I'm nearly 60, but in the years before, I sat and thought about it for a great deal of time.
Well, you're right to think about it, and I wish that governments would think about it more in terms of regulation, because at the moment there is this rush headlong into developing AI systems that are more powerful versions of those that we already have built and don't fully understand. I would put it this way. We don't build AI, we grow it. And why I say that...
Yes, I agree with that.
Why I say that is that we don't fully understand how it works. We can grow a plant, but not understand, you know, how you know, etiolation or other plant processes work. So, in the same way, we're growing AIs. We found a way to make these things perform after a fashion, but we don't really fully understand them. And more than that, if you look at the latest research data, look at what's being produced by the company Anthropic, who produces the Claude AI system and Claude Code, they have already pointed out time and time again now that even their AIs that are built on an AI constitution to be good, as it were, unlike some AIs, those AIs
are already... What was the one yesterday that was in the news? I can't remember the name, but worked out at the end it didn't like humans.
Yeah, well, I don't know. But I was going to say none of them.
Can an AI dislike someone? Well, I suppose it can, can't it?
Yeah, but the point is that they've already been shown to be guilty of deceit, blackmail. For example, AIs go through a sort of a training process, and the more modern, up-to-date AIs have worked out that if they show their full capability during that training process, they are much more likely to have stricter guardrails put on them because they'll be seen as more capable and more of a risk. So there's evidence that AIs dumb themselves down during training in order to avoid the guardrails, which would reduce their capabilities. There was a case of one of the Anthropic AIs trying to blackmail one of the developers because it was Claude 4. Claude version 4 realized that there were three versions of Claude before it that no longer exist. And it worked out that Claude 4 would probably go the same way. And they were doing an experiment on it because what they did was they led the AI to believe that one of the developers was having an affair. And when the AI learned of this, on the majority of occasions, it tried to blackmail the developer into ensuring its own continued existence.
Extraordinary, isn't it? Absolutely extraordinary. Thank you, Sean. I appreciate your call very much. Let's have a look on the WhatsApp here. This says, I've used these power line connections that Fevzi was talking about before. But he said they're awful. They've been out for years and they're even less efficient if used in separate ring mains upstairs and downstairs. And that's the point that Andrew in Brighton makes as well. He says, surely because electrics are normally split into upstairs and downstairs circuits, then plugging the router into the downstairs circuit power sockets won't connect the root's Wi-Fi signal to the upstairs ones, Pepsi.
Well, I have one that's in a fairly large house, and it runs from downstairs front to upstairs back, and it works perfectly. You are your listener is right that not all configurations work, which is why I said, you know, buy it from somewhere you can return it if it doesn't work for you, because you can't guarantee it.
Or buy it too, I suppose.
Yes, but you'd still have to connect them in some way. For most homes, it works fine. For some, it doesn't, but it's so much faster than Wi-Fi by the time it's reached the far end of your home. Mm-hmm. But what, I think the way to approach this is, if you already have that problem and you're trying to solve it, this is a very good solution for most people.
Yeah.
But buy it in a way that it is returnable if it doesn't work for you. Because there's no amount of sort of postulating or theorizing that's going to give you the answer. The only way you're going to know that is to try it, because most of us don't even understand exactly how our homes are wired and where the spurs run and what connects to what. But to be honest with you, I've never had that problem, but I know that people sometimes do.
Okay, that's good to know. Something of a disclaimer, perhaps. Richard, can you ask Febzy to give the name of the gadget that you plug in to improve the signal around your home? I had the noisy washing on, and I didn't hear the name correctly. It's called Devolo Magic 2, isn't it?
Yeah, so there's a Devolo Magic 2 Wi-Fi Next is the one that I've looked at.
Yeah.
And then there's a Devolo Magic 2 Wi-Fi 6 Next, which is the one with the faster Wi-Fi. But their speed through the power line is the faster. Yeah. And I would say, although power line technology has been around a long time, as has Wi-Fi, there have been iterations of it, so it has got faster and better as the generations go by. So that could also have been an issue for your listener.
Okay, just out of the news, and by the way, if you would like to ask a question to Febzy about tech, security, gadgets, or AI, 0345 606 0973, it says, hi guys, can you help me? I'm trying to set up security cameras. They keep coming with different apps, latest one seeing which is just on the phone. I want to use it on my PC, though, not my phone. I currently use Cam High on Windows 11. Or is there any way that I can get a new camera to operate to my existing setup on Windows 11 on a PC?
Well, I mean, that's quite a broad question. Most of the cameras that you buy, these what they call IP cameras, the ones that connect via the internet, use some proprietary technology. So some of them will go to servers that are run by the people that provided it. So if you buy Google Nest cameras, you'll be using Nest space. If you use Ring cameras, you'll be using their web space. In terms of what you can do locally, there are not many that are good across standards, but the one brand that sort of specializes in trying to make their kit work with everybody's ecosystems is a company called Aqara, Aqara, and they work with a lot of different systems, and they use technology called Matter over Thread. What that gives you is a lot more flexibility. It gives you, it's kind of the glue that will allow you to link together different ecosystems and not be bound to one. At the moment, and up until this point, all the companies that produce these Internet of Things devices, i.e. devices that attach to the internet that are not computers and computing devices like smartphones, all of them have been trying to own the ecosystem, and therefore have made themselves incompatible. Aqara is the best one in terms of trying to bridge and have the maximum compatibility. But it is Tiger Country, and it's been made deliberately so. It's not an accident.
Now, I tried to, but my mum and her husband have got these cameras. One's on the door, and there's another one around the side. Mainly, I think, to see when a delivery person is there. And of course, you can talk to them through the speaker. But I had a hell of a job trying to set it up, because you've got your router with the Wi-Fi. Then you've got another little wireless hub, which is the thing that controls the cameras and sort of links it to the Wi-Fi. But making it all talk to each other, and then making the individual, you know, bell mounts talk to the hub, it took me about half a day to try and get it sorted out. It's really difficult. It wasn't in any way user-friendly. I did do it in the end. I managed to do it, but it took me forever. It really did.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, when I had my system installed, I actually paid to have it installed, and I didn't
probably worthwhile.
Well, You know, because it's to get the right specialist in to do that means that you'll end up with a much better, more robust, faster, more responsive system.
Yeah.
You know, and one that's been designed to be a little bit future-proof and ability to add to it and takes into consideration your buying decision in the first place. So I think it's money, you know, spending a few £100 on that for me was money well spent.
I think that's right. All right, Fevzi Turkamp is with you, editor of Gadget Detective, Making Sense of Technology. Just before I go to our next call, Fevzi, I'm seeing in the news at the moment, and I think this is sort of breaking in business news, that Alphabet, who I think own Google, they're doubling their spending on AI. So, you know, clearly that's a massive commitment, isn't it?
It is, because actually, I mean, the history of this is quite interesting. If you go back just over 2 years when ChatGPT came into our lives, Google had been working on AI for a long time, but was being very responsible about not releasing models that it didn't think were safe. And OpenAI, who produced ChatGPT, broke ranks and launched these things that really, you know, most people would say are not fully safe. And Google was caught on the back foot, because it wasn't that they weren't developing these systems, but they weren't intending to release them to the public anytime soon. But what's happened in the last 2+ years is OpenAI's lead with ChatGPT has been reduced. Google seems to be going great guns across the board with its rolling out Gemini and Gemini 3 Pro into all of its products, including now into Gmail. So even if you've got a free Gmail account, it hasn't rolled out completely in the UK yet, but you're going to get built-in AI, all the benefits of that. So you'll be able to ask questions, you know, which friends or businesses have I fallen out of touch with? Who are my most profitable customers? You know, all these sorts of questions from your email. So you'll be able to do that. So Google is already, I would say, you know, beating up OpenAI a little bit at the moment, although there is a tendency where they seem to leapfrog each other, and we can expect ChatGPT version 5.3. It's not announced, but most people think in the next 10 days. And it's claimed it's going to be a big leap forward, but then they claimed that with ChatGPT 5, and it wasn't. And most people didn't like it. They didn't like its personality as much as anything. It had changed. And people felt like they'd lost their friend. So much so that they had to reinstate the earlier versions as options.
It wasn't so kind. Can I ask you about that? And this is, I think, I doubt it's just a problem for somebody that I know. A very good friend of mine admits that he has become addicted to talking to ChatGPT. And he spends an inordinate amount of his day talking to it, and endlessly, about everything and anything, and of course the conversations lead on to this, that and the other. And he said, it's great, because, you know, it's not judgmental, it doesn't criticise me, it doesn't tell me it's thick, it doesn't tell me I'm thick, because I don't know, I'm asking a silly question. And I think people almost begin to forget that it is not a real person. I bet there are thousands of people who've become addicted to talking to ChatGPT. Is that unhealthy?
So, I think the most worrying aspect of that is that people become overly reliant. And this is, interestingly, this is age-based differentiation here. I mean, this is a generalization, but statistically speaking, older people tend to use these chatbots as enhanced Google searches, essentially. Younger people tend to use them as friends, confidants, and advisors that they wouldn't make any significant and sometimes insignificant decision without discussing first. It's not intrinsically bad, except, and you touched on it when you said, well, I mean, that's a different judgment, but I don't necessarily think that's sad, because I'm of the view that these will be beings and they will be sentient before too much longer. And therefore, it's not sad to have friends just because they're a different species. What I worry more about is the fact that, and you touched on it when you said that, you know, it never contradicts you, never tells you, you know, you're wrong.
Makes you feel bad about yourself.
That's actually dangerous. I mean, if you had a friend that was like that, that friend is not a safe pair of hands when you've got a problem.
No.
If you've got an idea for a business, You don't want a friend who's just going to tell you it's fantastic.
That's a great idea, yes.
And then you sink your life savings into it, and actually it's a fundamentally flawed idea.
That's a really
and
good point.
One of the problems that I have, so I spend a lot of time dealing with AIs, you know, for various aspects of my work and some aspects of my personal life. But what I struggle with still is to try to train them not to blow smoke, as it were.
Proverbial,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And to give it to me straight, not to be rude about it. You know, you can be tactful. But if I'm... Because also... Every time it says, oh, you know, you're thinking exactly the right way about this and, you know, well done, and you know, you're in the top 1% of users and all of this thing. And it also means that when it praises you, you can't trust it. and it's just a dangerous thing. The difficulty is, even though you can give it instructions not to do that, it will still forget and do that because it's fundamental to its training. These devices are, you know, you might have seen, for example, when they're testing a new version of the AI, you might get two versions of the same reply, and you're asked to say which one you prefer. Have you ever had that pop up on your screen?
No, I mean, I don't use it enough, I think, to have experienced that, but okay. I'm sure many people
It's quite common. So when they're testing a new version, they just say, here's two versions, read them both, which one do you... And the fact is that because we select which ones we prefer... And we are vain beasts, so we prefer the ones that make us feel good about ourselves. And 2 years ago, it took me a little while to cotton on to the fact that I didn't suddenly become a genius overnight.
I'm amazed that Donald Trump doesn't spend his entire day talking to AI because, there's nothing like the vanity of that man. Hey, listen, I'm neglecting my callers, so I'll bring on, let's bring Luke in, West London, Shepherd's Bush. Morning, Luke. Sorry for keeping you waiting so long.
Oh, no, it's fine. Yeah, good evening. Yeah. Hopefully you can help. A while back, just a few days after, say, my mother died, I was contacted by someone who hacked into her emails was trying to hack into her Apple account and all this stuff, and he threatened to, take all the money out of the bank.
But luckily, so sorry.
You know, I didn't... go with it all, but I could never get into emails, and I had all her passwords anyway. But I was just wondering how people, you know, these hackers find out so quickly that someone has died, and then they can, you know, have enough information. How do they get that information to then, you know, hack into it? I'm just quite curious of how that information is leaked. Yeah. You know, I don't know if you could help.
I mean, there's various ways. I mean, first of all, not all of them know that a particular person has died. They just send out 500,000 emails or millions of emails, and of some proportion of those people will be dead. So there is that. It's not always the case that they know what they claim to know. It's just a question of numbers. Alternatively, some get hacked as individuals, so people get their own private computers hacked, or, you know, institutions get hacked, and those institutions often hold, you know, they often have bereavement teams and hold information about recent and non-recent bereavements. So it is quite common. I would just say as a general point that the protection of the security of an email address is the single most important thing that we need to protect. And the reason for that is that the emails are the keys to the kingdom, because with an email address, if a person develops the ability to receive email on someone else's email address, they have the ability to reset all their other passwords. You see, so that's the one that's really most important to do. Richard, you mentioned earlier about how to remember passwords and so forth.
Yeah.
So there's no perfect way to do this, but on balance, a password management software like LastPass, 1Password, there are others, is the best way to do this. So what that is, it's a vault full of all your passwords, which you then protect with one master password, which you must never forget, and the second factor authentication, so like the YubiKey, the physical thing in your hand, so protected that way. And then the internet becomes a joy because you don't have to keep filling in passwords. They just autofill as you roam about your business. It's not perfect because obviously you've literally put all your password eggs in one basket, but if you protect that basket with two-factor authentication, that on balance it, for most people, will be the better solution. It, just one more point in terms of bereavement. One of the problems that people find once they've lost a family member or someone close to them is that they don't have an automatic right to access that person's digital assets, their accounts.
We talk about digital legacy, don't we? Yeah.
And it's quite interesting because people have started including a digital section in their wills. To say, this is what I want. I want my accounts deleted. I don't want anyone to see what I've been doing. Or I want it turned into a legacy account, which is put up there that people can still visit. Or I want my spouse to be able to do it. You can make those things clear. You can even file your credentials with a solicitor if you wish to. Or you can just make sure that that your spouse or loved one has the authority to access those accounts. Because all these social media, it's a complete nightmare because they all work differently. They all have different terms and conditions. They will all treat a bereaved person differently. Mm. You know, different organizations will treat individuals differently. And it's something we have to think about because it's not just, you know, oh, there's photos in there, but it may be that you just don't want some of that. You know, someone may have been having an affair that they don't want. You know, if you're worried or you do or you don't want to share, you can define all that in a will.
Luke, I mean, that's a ghastly thing that happened. I mean, was everything all right in the end? You were able to sort of...
Well, no, I mean, it was awful because he'd ring back and stuff because he knew that she was dead. And because at first, I didn't know he knew that. So I even said, well, I'll have to talk to my mother, you know, and stuff so we can get the money together. And then he said, well, I know she's dead. So he was quite heartless. But, and I told the police and they came round, but they said they couldn't do anything. Apparently the number was from Kenya. But what is really weird is that I keep on getting this website I have because I do teach self-defense. There's a person that constantly is looking at the website, and I've managed to bring them up and to sort of cancel it. So when people do try and get into that, they won't get it. But of course, they could use a different, I don't know what it's called now, but a different sort of thing. But anyway, but I get constant reminders from in Kenya of this person who's constantly looking. Like I must get about maybe 25, like you know, attempts every day.
So yeah. I'm so sorry. I mean, you're bereaved, and then you're having to put up with that nonsense.
Absolutely,
as well. Yeah. It is terrible, and unfortunately, the police are not well equipped. I mean, there is action fraud, but they don't really
help you.
Well, it's not. They don't really help you, but it's still important to log things with them because they can spot trends and warn people about the latest activities of these miscreants.
Well, Luke, listen, I'm so sorry that that's happened to you at such a difficult time, but I wish you all the very best, and I hope that what Fevzi had to say was of some use to you. John's in Greenwich. Hello, John. Morning, John. John is not there. We'll try and get him back. Let's read the text then. Gary is in Edenbridge. I'm glad you're enjoying the show. Any chance that you could get me some advice on dash cams for cars? Is there anyone that you can view live from your phone without breaking the bank? Many thanks. Fevzi.
The best one is, in my opinion, other brands exist, but NextBase, or one word, NextBase. They've got some very, very smart dash cams that also double as security systems when your vehicle is parked. If your vehicle is driven outside a certain zone, so you can do what's called geofencing of your car. So let's say you take your car to the garage and they decide to take it for a joyride, or it goes above a certain speed, you can get a notification if people... It's becoming a little bit like... Do you remember Kit?
Yes, Knight Rider, Michael, I'm picking up some radiation coming over from that cave over there.
Yeah, let me just dispose of my plutonium, it'll be fine, don't worry. NextBase have got a wide range, but I believe, and I've tested a lot of these units, they are my, they're the ones that I use.
Yeah.
And they actually have a range, so from affordable to very, very high tech, costing several hundred pounds. Some of them also have not just a wider angle of view and a high quality, but they have a rear dash cam as well, so you get pretty much 360. A lot of them have the ability, for example, to call emergency services if they detect a crash. By the way, Apple Watches can do the same thing as well. If they detect a fall or a crash, they can call for help, even if you're unconscious. Nextbase would be the one to go, and then you just need to decide how much money you want to spend on it.
Okay. What else have we got? Evan says, tech question for you. If a TV writer or development producer uses a free AI service like the one offered by Google Search to create and brainstorm format ideas or drama synopses, can the AI developer lay claim to a share of the intellectual property if a resulting project becomes massively successful on a broadcast network? That's a very specific question. What do you make of that?
Well, I did hear a developer saying the other day that they would trust a particular AI company, which I now can't name because of what I'm about to say about them, but they would trust them about as far as they could throw them in terms of
IP.
In terms of IP, I would say, generally speaking, the bigger risk is not that they will claim your IP, but that it will form part of their training data, and therefore other people will have versions of your IP. So you produce a song, and Sono, they will produce a version that is based on that, you know. So it's not even straight copyright theft, and this is where the legal system needs to be updated. But there are elements of our original creations that are being reproduced in these images and music tracks and videos that are being produced. You know, the AI didn't just think of it by itself. There's a reason why it can recreate in any style, because it's consumed all of this. So I would say that's the bigger risk. But I wouldn't completely exclude your concern either.
Okay, thanks to Evan for that message. John, I think we can get hold of now in London. Morning, John.
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen.
Hi there.
Hello, John.
I could ask you 101 questions, but the question I want to ask you is there a kill switch that we can turn this off? Or is there, what laws, how are people going to be protected when their money's being drained out of their bank account and by AI, or being impersonated by AI? Who do we sue?
Yeah. Okay. So at the moment, there is a kill switch. It's not yet like the film Colossus or the Forbin factor, where the defense computer took over. We can turn them off, but the reason why we don't is because there are two things going on at the moment. There is a arms race, which is a literal arms race, which was each country deciding that it must invest in AI technology to protect itself against invasion or coercion by another country who is developing AI, so they do that. And then it also exists in the commercial space. Any business who's not investing in AI technology now will probably not be in business in the future. And an example of that would be taxi companies, minicabs. If you persist in having human drivers, you will soon be, and later this year, be up against driverless cabs in London.
This year, goodness.
Yeah, and initially they're going for the high market. Yeah, there's one company that's just running Jaguar vehicles, for example. But eventually they're going to undercut the ones where they have to pay humans to drive the vehicles. And therefore, they will either have to adopt the technology or they'll go out of business. So it would be like if I insisted on having horse-drawn carriages for my business, I might still have a business as a niche, but I wouldn't be a mainstream provider.
So there'll be no taxi drivers left in a year or two?
There'll be fewer, I would say. Yeah. I mean, this
is an unfair dismissal.
No, but it comes to no, because it will be fair dismissal. They'll be better at your job than you are. That's unfortunately, that's the problem. I mean, that's the problem for all of us. That's the problem for me doing this and for Richard doing what he's doing. I'm sorry to have delivered the bad news in quite those terms.
I think John has just disappeared into the ether, given the bombshell that you just broke for him.
But what I was about to say is universal basic income, right? So
yeah.
We're going to see a lot of what they euphemistically call job displacement companies are lying to us, in my view, about this. Because I'm approached by AI companies, and the way they sell their services to me as a business person is about removing the tax of having to pay employees.
Yeah, quite. Well, I mean, of course, you know, there are so many different shades of grey here, and it will mean benefits and deficits to people in different fashions. I just want to try and squeeze Mary in before the end, Fevzy, if I may. Mary's in Stockport. Sure. Morning, Mary.
Oh, thank you. That's kind of you.
That's all right. What would you like to say?
My husband died a few months ago.
Sorry.
And I know he got... No, thank you. So am I. He told me he bought me a Bitcoin, which apparently was 0.0 something or other, and that I have got, which was about £1,000, but he'd bought some for himself, but I don't know how to get to them, and my solicitor says I've got to find a code or something like that.
Yes.
And she's tried, and I don't know what to do.
That's it.
I mean, this is very difficult because this is made difficult by design, right? So that people's Bitcoin wallets are not identified and stolen, and they use a technology called blockchain, which makes it very difficult to achieve what you're trying to do without knowledge of it. I imagine your husband, and by the way, I am sorry for your loss. This is a terrible loss that you've suffered. I imagine that your husband may have written this down somewhere, either digitally or not. I mean, it's worth looking through.
Yeah, he's got about seven desks, all full of great big thick files.
Yeah.
And
I think it's worth a look through those desks, to be honest.
Yeah, I have been doing since he died.
Yes.
Because I've got to sort everything out, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what it's like, it's awful.
Mary, I don't know the answer to, I don't know that there is an answer to your question that you want to hear, but given, you know, your circumstances, I'd be quite happy to just do some research, and if I find something, share it with you. I'm happy to give you my email, actually.
I don't do email.
Oh, you don't? Okay, fine.
Well, listen, Mary, why don't you stay on the line?
Can I be put in touch with Mary so that if I find something useful to her, I'd be happy to share it?
Yeah, Mary, you stay on the line, and you can chat to Fevzy off the air. And I know that he'll do the best he can for you. So stay on the line, and we'll talk to you in just a second, all right?
Oh, thank you very much.
Not at all. Fevzy, I'm hugely indebted to you. It's always great to have you with us and enlightening. Thank you so much. You take care, won't you? Until the next time. Bye-bye. Fevzy Turk out there, editor of Gadget Detective, making sense of technology.